ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Charles Lucky Luciano was a mobster. In fact, the father of modern organised crime. And he was supposed to die behind bars. But that didn't happen. What happened instead was, well, strange.
At the time, it was extremely secretive, and since then, there was a massive cover-up of this operation after the war. An investigation later took place that was classified for decades.
For years, the US government tried to hide a secret pact between the Mafia and the US Navy to help them win World War II. But why? And how? And who really won?
He's a notorious fighter. He's a gunfighter. He fights with his fists. Don't get on the wrong side of this guy.
I'm Mark Fennell, and this is the tale of an impossible partnership that changed the course of war and changed how the world would see organized crime. And I promise you, no one saw it coming.
The story begins in the very early days of America's involvement in World War II. So about 2 months after the attack of Pearl Harbor by the Japanese, a calamitous event happens in the Upper West Side of New York City.
This is the voice of crime and labor historian Matt Black. And I want you to imagine that you are standing near the water in New York in 1942. You are about to get the shock of a lifetime.
Our biggest ship in the Atlantic fleet, called the Normandy, which was a troop-carrying ship, was being retrofitted in the harbor when a fire broke out. Now, the ship was incredibly important. It could ferry 15,000 troops across the Atlantic in one go, and it was so fast that U-boats weren't even really a threat to it. And it erupted into flames in the early morning, and you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers saw the smoke that kind of turned day into night. And there was this very deep fear that, first of all, New York was under attack because, you know, these people had just seen newsreels of, ships burning in Pearl Harbor. But the next day, really what the fear was is that the ship had been sabotaged or spies had infiltrated the waterfront and were able to set fire to the ship. And it going down in this very public fashion, you know, made the Navy have to react right away. And it was the Navy who was tasked with defending the port of New York. And this is what kicked it off. The thought was that it was just fully infiltrated with spies and they had to find them.
What would have been going through the minds of the average New Yorker looking at that, do you think?
Oh, my God. I mean, that would have been really terrifying. I mean, you think of the instance of the Normandy where, you know, it happened during the day and, you know, perhaps you think, gosh, we're under attack. And, you know, there were other instances, too, where at night, you know, people could see from their doorsteps if they were on the water. They could see giant flames erupting like volcanoes, you know, out in the ocean. And it might have been like an oil tanker that was torpedoed. Can't imagine the fear.
Right, so it's important to understand where America is at in terms of the war at this moment. This is really just a couple of months after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and the nation is just lurching into war.
Yeah, we're just getting started, you know, and I mean, the United States was completely ill-prepared for the war. And in the first months and even the first year or so after, you know, the resources that we had in the Atlantic were just completely inadequate. In the Pacific as well, but especially in the Atlantic, the war was literally brought to our coastal waters, and German U-boats were basically able to operate with impunity, so it was not a very good situation.
So the Port of New York at this particular juncture in history was one of the largest, busiest ports in the world. So strategically, it's very important for America. And the concern at the time, I understand, was that there was potential for sabotage or spies along this shoreline. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, knowing that the longshoremen in the New York waterfront was largely an immigrant population, and a lot of them were from Italy, which of course was allied with Germany, forming the Axis powers that the Allies were fighting against. And the fear was that these immigrants were loyal to the Italian government versus, you know, the United States, their adopted home. And, you know, even President Roosevelt said some things that, you know, would kind of disparage that group. And that's really where the Navy started. You know, they're thinking that this group is probably who we need to be targeting if there are indeed spies and saboteurs. So they started sending men down to the waterfront, you know, agents asking questions, and they got absolutely nowhere, because the longshoremen there had been taught to play deaf and dumb. They just pretended like they didn't speak English, you know, because they knew they were authority figures, and, you know, their bosses, the people who ran those unions that they worked for, did not want them speaking to authorities ever.
So that is when the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence turned to an unusual ally, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no one saw it coming. But yeah, what they learned, you know, pretty quickly is that the reason why they weren't talking to them is because their union bosses were members of the mafia. It was called the mob, you know, more back in the day, but it was also referred to as the mafia. And the Italian organized crime unit there, they owned the waterfront completely. And if the Navy was going to get anywhere, those are the people that they had to talk to and bring them into their side.
In time, this gambit would be given a code name, Operation Underworld. But if you are US Navy intelligence, how do you even begin to work with the mob?
Yeah, so what they came up with is they went to the district attorney's office, you know, the people who were literally prosecuting these people that they're about to recommend for covert operations. But there was a second objective in going to the district attorney first. And the real question was, were these men loyal to the United States of America? That was the first question. And, you know, you might not think of an organized crime outfit being patriotic, but the Italian mafia certainly loves the United States of America and were more than happy to help. And so the district attorney kind of made some introductions for the Navy, and that's how it got started.
Okay, so we have the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence, right? They're approaching the Italian mafia through the district attorney's office, and they essentially want to recruit these mob figures to help them with these undercover operations. So, Matt, introduce me to Joseph Sox Lanza, mostly because I'm curious as to how anybody gets the nickname Sox.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, he's your bruiser type of mafia soldier, you know, and he is the first major contact that the district attorney, you know, hooks up with the Navy. And Sox Lanza is this enormous man. And the reason why they call him Sox is because he socks anything. He socks anybody that disagrees with him, gets in his way. He's a notorious fighter. He's a gunfighter. He fights with his fists. Don't get on the wrong side of this guy. He'll slap you with a fish, because he was referred to as the czar of the Fulton fish market. And that's kind of where they started. There's a tons of fishing boats that go in and out of the Fulton fish market, you know, every day. Their question became, are these boats rendezvousing with U-boats, you know, and giving them, you know, supplies? So that's kind of how it all got organized to start.
So you've got this loyal to America guy who'll sock you out. Like, what's his value to the intelligence officers? What is he giving them?
He's basically providing them with connections. He's opening doors. So you get tens of thousands, maybe in hundreds of thousands of longshoremen between Brooklyn and Manhattan, you know, and other boroughs in New York. And you can't talk to every single one of those. So you got to talk to their bosses. And Sox Lanza, being a major soldier in the mafia, was also, you know, the head of, what was it called? The Seafood Union. And he had contacts all over New England. And so he actually was under indictment at the time. The district attorney was prosecuting him. And they brought him in to help the Navy. They said, there's going to be no deal. You don't get any kind of deal. You're going to do this because it's your patriotic duty. And he did, you know, to his credit. And then he was also able to open some doors in Manhattan proper, all through unions. You know, if they needed to infiltrate a building, they would get the elevator operator union, you know, involved. And all of a sudden, they'd have access to an elevator at night. So the unions played a huge role in that.
Okay, so basically Sox is giving naval intelligence greater access to gather information than they otherwise would have had. How public was this at the time? Was it well known in the public or the Navy?
No, this was not well known within the Navy nor the public. At the time, it was extremely secretive, and since then, there was a massive cover-up of this operation after the war. An investigation later took place that was classified for decades. So, no, not a lot of people knew about it.
Was everybody in the Navy that did know about it, were they on board with the idea?
That's a good question. The people who were not on board with the idea were let go.
Really?
pretty quick.
Wow.
Yeah, there were a few people who had a problem with it, and they were just, okay, well, you know, you don't need to be a part of this operation, you know. One thing you have to understand is that the outcome of World War II was not a foregone conclusion. It is for us, you know, because we know how it ended. But in those early years, it was very much an issue in doubt. And so you have people just basically coming to the conclusion, like, we need to bring whatever guns we have to bear to fight this terrible conflict because we might not win, you know, and that kind of settled it for a lot of them.
Right. So Sox is useful, right? He's playing a role, but he is kind of just the beginning. To get real access, they needed to recruit somebody far bigger, somebody to be their eyes and their ears and to root out any potential saboteurs, Matt.
They certainly did. You know, Sox brought in Meyer Lansky, you know, who's kind of known as the mob's accountant, and Frank Costello as well. And then they all kind of formulated a plot, and Lanza is credited with coming up the idea, but they probably all thought it up together, of bringing in Charles Lucky Luciano.
Yes, Charles Lucky Luciano, the father of the modern American mob. And they don't really get much bigger and more dangerous than this.
Luciano is... you know, an interesting character because he's basically credited with inventing organized crime in the United States. He's an incredibly interesting character. He's got a very sinister look. He took a savage beating decades earlier that caused one of his eyes to only open halfway, and it just kind of remained that way. And he had tons of scars on his face too from the same beating, and which probably, you know, the look on his face probably helped him a lot in his business. But in 1935, he was prosecuted by a man named Thomas Dewey, and he was sentenced to 30 to 50 years in prison for pandering. So in 1942, when he's contacted by some of his mafia friends to be a part of Operation Underworld, he's in Dannemora prison. He gets moved to a prison that's a little closer to Manhattan. He has no idea why that's happened, and the reason is because they need him closer so that they can talk to him.
So this is the wild part of this scheme, right? Because they've hooked this big time mobster to work for them. But he is helping them literally from prison, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. He certainly did, yeah. Such was his influence that he could do that. The reason why they brought him in the first place is, you know, as many doors as Sox Lanza opened up for the Navy, eventually he got stonewalled. There might be rival, you know, there are other Italian families that don't really want to listen to someone who's so low ranking. And the Irish gangsters in the Upper West Side, they certainly don't want to listen to him. They don't work with him. You know, they're rivals, you know. But, you know, such was Luciano's respect among the underworld community, you know, with all, because he worked with Jews, he worked with Irish, he worked with Italian. It didn't matter, you know, who you were, as long as you were interested in making money. And so that kind of respect is, you know, what they needed was somebody who could snap the whip on the entire underworld. And that's certainly what he did. And it was just like a matter of, you know, Charlie Lucky says he needs you to do this, or Charlie Lucky would be very upset if he found out you didn't do this for me. And that carried a heck of a lot of weight.
What was in it for him? Like, why? He's already in prison. Why is he agreeing to help the Navy?
Right. Well, you know, and he's reluctant to do so at first. The first people to make contact with him are his lawyer, and Meyer Lansky, who's his best friend. But he's reluctant when he's approached with the idea, because he has a deportation order over him. So whenever if he gets out of prison while he's still alive, he's going to be deported to Italy the moment he becomes a free man. That's a problem for him if he decides to help the U.S. Navy against the Axis cause. So he helps the U.S., he gets out of prison, and then he's deported to Italy. That's an unfriendly government. He'll probably just end up getting lynched. So at the end of the day, Meyer Lansky convinced him that even though there was no deal made on the spot to get him out, he's told him, you know, this is going to be your best, if not only, opportunity to get out.
So when we started this conversation, we were talking about this fire on the SS Normandy that obviously terrified New Yorkers and sparked action out of the Navy. Out of curiosity, was it started by sabotage?
Well, there is a famous story within mafia circles that Alberto Anastasia, another famous mafia leader, was responsible for starting the fire. And the reason why he did it is because the Navy would realize their vulnerabilities and ask the mafia to help. But there doesn't seem to be any truth behind that story. And there have been two government investigations about what happened on that day. And the conclusion is that a welder might have sparked a pile of life preservers.
Right. So the whole instigating event that got the Navy looking at the mafia might have just been an accident.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, just the fact that it was such a public event.
Yeah, right.
You know, might have been the only reason why, you know, they had to take it so seriously.
In the end, the mafia was incredibly helpful to the US in World War II, but looking back, it seems not entirely in the way that was originally conceived.
You know, we don't have any acts of sabotage on the waterfront because of Operation Underworld, or was the threat overblown? You know, and when you empower the mafia, you certainly have to ask these questions because it could be a byproduct of it. And of course, you don't win a war by just securing the home front. You know, you have to take the fight to the enemy.
While it's hard to prove what sabotage the mafia did or didn't stop on America's homeland, we can say that it had a huge impact in the war overseas.
And so that's one of the major things that comes out of Operation Underworld, is that once the Battle of the Atlantic starts to turn in favor of the Allies, and now all of a sudden the Allies are thinking about invading Europe, of course the first target is chosen is Sicily. And what makes New York City very unique is that outside of Italy, there are more Italians in New York City than anywhere else in the world, and many of them had just recently been there. So all of a sudden, the Navy, through all the contacts they had made through Operation Underworld, shifts gears and starts collecting information about Italy. They get everything from postcards to whatever graphs, you know, interviews, you know, whatever they can get their hands on. And a lot of the connections and information that are gleaned through that were extremely important in the invasion of Sicily later on.
What do you think is the legacy of Operation Underworld? What do you think the lasting impact of it actually is?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you look at the mafia's hold on the waterfront after World War II, and it is extreme. You know, these longshoremen were taken advantage of quite brutally. So they did empower the mafia in that sense. And if Operation Underworld, you know, were the only thing to come out of this, you know, their operations, I would say, well, they probably overstepped a little bit and empowered the mafia a little too much. But given that they did contribute to some offensive capabilities in Italy, I think it's ultimately that makes it a good thing.
See, this is interesting, right? Because the Navy turned to the mafia to help them survive World War II, based on what we now know was very likely an accident. But it actually seems like, as I listen to you, that the mafia benefited a lot more from World War II and the Navy than the other way around.
I would say so, yeah.
Right.
I would definitely say so. And, you know, especially Luciano ends up getting out of prison.
I was going to ask, so what happened? So he was under threat of deportation. If he goes back to Italy, he gets lynched and killed by Nazi-aligned Italians. So what actually happened to him?
Right, so I hate to be spoiler, but the Allies win the war.
Wait. You've got to warn people about that stuff.
Right. So about a year after the war, he's still in prison wondering what the heck he's doing there, you know, thinking he's done his part, you know, and he wants to go. What's interesting is that the prosecutor, Thomas Dewey, who put him away, is now the governor of New York, who's has the ability to get him out of, to pardon him and get him out of prison. And so he does just that. There's rumors that a bribe had been offered to Dewey in order to get him out. And Dewey he has a parole board do an investigation on his good status, you know, as a citizen during the war. The investigation says nothing about what he did. It just says that he helped. And Dewey lets him out, and then he just gets deported to Italy. And then he basically spends the rest of his life trying to get back to New York City. You know, he came over to New York City when he was like 6 years old. So New York is his home. You know, Italy is not. And when he, you know, does get back to Italy, he's not exactly treated very kindly as well. So being a, you know, notorious mafia figure, authorities aren't going to like a guy like that around.
So this was secret for a very long time. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how did it come out?
Yeah, well, it tried to come out a few times. There was quite the cover-up afterwards. And the reason for the cover-up that we're told is that they were worried about the reputation of the Navy being negatively impacted by an association like the Mafia. There may have also been some crimes that we don't know about, you know, that were committed, perhaps that they were trying to cover up and not let anybody know about it. But several years after the fact, in the early 1950s, Thomas Dewey, the governor who pardoned Luciano, is still coming under fire from journalists that he accepted a bribe, and that's why Luciano is out of prison. So he decided to commission his own investigation, and turns into a 3,000 pages of testimony and a 100-page report. But he's trying to prove to the world that Luciano did indeed contribute to the war effort, and that's why he was let out of prison, not because of some bribe that he accepted. And so Dewey goes through this process. He gets the report. It says what he wants it to say. You know, it shows that Luciano helped. He gives it to the Navy, and the Navy says, "This could damage our reputation. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to slap a top secret label on this report." And so for decades later, it was classified, didn't see the light of day. Poor Thomas Dewey dies without having his name being cleared of this accusations of bribery. And eventually it did, and now it's available for the public.
And when it did come out, do you reckon people were surprised?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there were rumors that had come out prior to, and one specifically was by a gossip columnist named Walter Winchell, who came out with an article, I think it was in 1947, either way, after World War II, claiming that Lucky Luciano had been awarded the Medal of Honor. And I always thought that was completely absurd. You know, there's stories of Luciano being plucked right out of jail and then jumping with the paratroopers in Sicily and liberating these towns because they knew who he was, which, of course, is completely absurd. But anyway, you know, that just rumors like that were the only shreds of information that people had that something like this had happened.
Operation Underworld is like this object lesson in unpredictable outcomes. It was instigated by an attack that was probably an accident. It was a program designed to use immigrants to protect the American homeland. But ultimately, Operation Underworld had its biggest impact far away from American shores, in the country that those immigrants came from, Italy.
Well, I'd have to say that certainly it's the way it aided the invasion of Italy, especially Sicily, you know, was extremely impactful. So, you know, not only did certain intelligence, you know, come out of New York City, but there was also contacts that came out of New York City. And so there were four Navy agents who were plucked right out of Operation Underworld to receive commando training in North Africa and be part of the first wave of attacks on Sicily. The reason why they were chosen is because they spoke Italian and they were athletic and they were smart, but also because they had contacts in New York City from people to go look for in Italy. And so, you know, Mafia people in New York City, you know, knew people over there. And so these guys got out in front of the front lines, were able to talk with the local populace, gain information. And there was even one instance where they were able to find out the location of the naval headquarters in Sicily and were able to raid it because of these conversations that they had. So that's incredibly impactful because they saved many, many lives. You know, they found out where the minefields were, you know, on the beaches, you know, just those kinds of things that saved tons of Allied lives.
You have been listening to the voice of Matthew Black. He is a journalist. And if you enjoyed his story, you can read it. He's written a book all about it, Operation Underworld, how the Mafia and the US government teamed up to win World War II. Matthew Black, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to No One Saw It Coming. This episode was produced by Zoe Ferguson and Taryn Briadko on Gadigal Land with sound design by Hamish Camilleri, and all of it for ABC Radio National. Now, this is a new show, so it would be very helpful if you head along to whichever podcasting app you happen to be listening to this on and rate us and leave a review and share it with your friends. And when you go visit other people's houses, maybe turn on the radio at the exact time when it's on. I don't mind what you do. It's up to you. Of course, do subscribe to the podcast. But more importantly, before I go, I know lots of you have stories and I would love to hear from you. If you have a story or a moment in history that you think we should cover, please email us. noonesawitcoming@abc.net.au, and I'll be back with a brand new episode next week. I'm Mark Fennell. We'll see you then. Bye.
It's the case that's captured the attention of the world. The mushroom case.
On the menu was beef Wellington.
Erin Patterson is charged with murder. She says she's innocent.
I'm devastated.
Mushroom Case Daily. Hear the podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.